हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So basically up to now we've been describing the mentality or the mood or understanding what is the position of devotional service. And that now we'll start to get into actually what is the process. But as we discussed before is that the principle of you have the activity and then you have the mentality of the activity, the mood of the activity, the attitude. So if the attitude's right, then the activity will be correct and its result will be correct. Otherwise, it might be the skill is very good, but the result doesn't come out very good. Because of the nature of the attitude being wrong, there may be the element of one's own self-centeredness or some misunderstanding. So we see up to now he's been establishing that. So then in this, then the element of being able to do it without desire for the result. In other words, a non-fruitive endeavor. But that non-fruitive endeavor then is not that the non-fruitiveness is the devotion. No, it is the support for the devotion. Devotion is devotion. Right? But what gets in the way of the devotion is the fruit of attitude. So the removing it then is important. But it's not the removal of it that is devotional. It's that one is making the devotional aspect prominent over one's own fruitive, desire that is devotional. Does that make sense? It's a very fine point. But because it is part of the process, therefore it becomes a support of bhakti. But it itself is not bhakti. You know, just like the pot is not cooking. The spoon is not cooking. The fire is not cooking. But they're extremely useful in the cooking process. Right? But it's the combination where you're doing that and putting all that together with your spicing and your techniques that makes for cooking. So in the same way as the knowledge and renunciation is not devotion, but they're very useful in the process of devotion. So that is important to note. And so then having come to that where we've understood now the difference between what is actually devotional and not, and the actual position and use of karma and jnana in as a support to the angas of bhakti, then with that, then we can go on to, you know, that's the position. Now we can go on to the attitude of the element of the vaidhi and the rag. And that the vaidhi then means that we're following the rules because this is what is the appropriate thing to do. It's the correct thing to do. We appreciate that and we're doing it. Rag means basically you're doing it because you want to do it. Right? So that'll naturally come with practice. If it's understood that that's what you're looking for, it will automatically come. If you don't know that's what you're looking for, then it will come to some degree, but it'll still have the desire to express it through the form of rules will remain, right? Because there is a lot of attachment, there is a lot of emotion and sentiment very high, let's say in Dwarka, much more than in Vaikuntha. But still, the medium of expression is through the rules. Therefore, as we mentioned, is that even when it gets to the element of having the rag element to it, it will still be sambhogecha, that it will be according to a specific relationship. And that specific relationship, the rules of that will be, it will guide, it will be the prominent medium of expression. rather than the supportive. You know what I'm saying? In other words, just like you see in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, much of the time the element of the renunciation and the knowledge is prominent. And when that is very strong, we will consider it well situated. Someone is very knowledgeable, someone is very detached, very good in his rules and regulations, his sadhana, his strictness, we'll take that as a good sign, because the medium of expression is Vaidhi. So then that will be considered good. But at the same time, it's good if it's seen in connection to Krishna. Right? Then it's a good sign, because someone who is on the rag platform will be performing the Vaidhi sadhana generally better than the Vaidhi sadhana because of the commitment of doing it for Krishna. Like that. So generally it'll be who's better at the Vaidhi, that it's pleasant, it's natural, then that generally means they're on the platform of rag. If they're better at the Vaidhi, but there's a bit of uncomfortableness in that others are below their standard and no one else is up to their standard in that, and there's difficulties in there, then that generally means it hasn't come to that platform. They're still making the mistake that because they have come to a high level of knowledge or renunciation, that therefore it is a symptom that their bhakti is greater. Right? It's only a symptom their bhakti is greater in that the devotional mood of pleasing Krishna is the prominent element. Then the jnana and vairag are natural offshoots that you understand that, oh, it's done. You know what I'm saying? It means when something is developing, there is some symptoms like that. So then there are symptoms. So it's natural that they are symptoms. But that symptoms means that it's very natural, like that. If you see the person's heart is becoming harder, then they've made a mistake here that they put the jnana and vairag as more prominent than the bhakti, or equal. They haven't put it in its proper position, right? So in that same way, then you have the sambhog and the tadbhavecha. That the idea of that I want to be doing it, you know, in that form of it, or I want to be supporting those who are doing it. In other words, one is I am the one who manifests the devotion through that form, or I am the one that assists those who are doing that. Does that make sense? So having established these mentalities, now we start coming to the actual direct processes themselves. Right, the actual items. So now we start with chanting. The fortunate devotee, by taking shelter of the holy name, the supreme process, will become absorbed in service on the level of bhava. In chanting the name, diksha and purushcharya rites are not necessary. By avoiding namabhas and namaparad, gradually the person will be able to chant the name continuously. So in other words, he's pointing out here is that, see, we have to be able to make a distinction here on platforms. You have the Bhagavat platform, you have the Pancharatrik, and you have the Vedic. They're the same thing, just that the form of it becomes more and more, let's say, ritualized. The Bhagavat, its whole mood is simply that of bhava. That is that the mood is right, everything's right. Pancharatra is the same thing, the mood is right, but because of our conditioned nature, we have a tendency to not have the mood right. Therefore, then we have a set of rules and regulations that establish that we will always at least be doing the right activity that we can have the right mood in. By being in that platform, we're at least not doing something wrong. Right? We may be in Mangalartik because that's the Pancharatrik rule. We may be thinking of something completely different, but at least we're in Mangalartik, singing the song there, seeing the deities. So how wrong can you go? Well, if you didn't have that rule, it was simply on, you know, you're chanting the holy name and that's all you're doing, then you might be distracted where you're not chanting, and you're distracted, and then nothing's going on. So the Pancharatrik idea is that you're trying to take the Bhagavat form and you ritualize it to some extent so that one is always engaged in Bhagavat activities. Right? But it has that formalization. The Vedic is that it's addressing that you have ideas and needs outside of the Bhagavat necessity. Therefore, now it becomes more formalized so that those can be properly connected to the Pancharatrik and the Vedic and the Bhagavat process. Like that. So here in that, what he's saying here is diksha as we know it is not necessary, you know, on the level of bhava, because bhava, you're liberated. So those who function on that platform, then they don't have what we'd call diksha. They follow what's called siksha. But on the Bhagavat platform, that siksha is diksha. In other words, like we've heard Prabhupada said, where you're accepting the order of the spiritual masters, your life and soul, right? That's initiation. That's the Bhagavat aspect. The ritual that you go through, that's the Pancharatrik. Because on the platform of bhava, then one is liberated. So if you committed yourself, you're committed. Right? You don't have your conditioned nature to distract you. The Pancharatrik platform, you're still dealing with that distractibility. So because of that, then there's a formal ritual. You know you've gone through the ritual. The ritual itself has potency. It has purificatory ability. And you've been through the ritual. Everybody else has seen you go through the ritual. So now, whether it's a good day or a bad day, you're still initiated. Right? You know, you can't be that now, you know, somebody else is your guru, right? You can't work on that, you know, he smiled at me, he's my guru, and then tomorrow, oh, he didn't smile at me, so that one's my guru. Right? So it avoids that kind of stuff. It keeps one steady. So the siksha, so the person on the platform of the Bhagavat Marg, then when they get the instruction, they follow it. And so, because siksha is the life of diksha, then one is connected. The diksha is there. And on this principle, that's how we see that our line accepts that the six Goswamis, Prabhupada says, are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya. But there is never in any case a Pancharatrik right to establish that. But you see in all the cases, there is instruction, right? The most prominent we know is Rupa and Sanatan, right? Because that was very obvious and very great. But the other ones were also instructed, but because they are servants of these two, then it may be prominent, may not be. Does that make sense? But the point is because they've received instruction directly from Lord Chaitanya, and they're liberated souls, they're initiated. If you're not liberated, then we use the Pancharatrik process. So we use this, what do you call it? Not punching in here. Pancha Samskar, like that. Because that establishes that we know the material world is a place of misery, therefore we take the upward path towards Krishna, we accept our, identify ourselves as Krishna's servant, and in that position as Krishna's servant, then we take up the worship of the deity using specific mantras, the authorized mantras. So this Purushcharya Vidhi then is what is preliminary to the Pancharatrik rites. They're basically Vedic rites. In which, too smoky over there. Good there. Too smoky for you?
No, that's alright. I just
covered up. Oh, okay, because otherwise you can try sitting over here of that, but then you might expose yourself to the mosquitoes. So it's like everything has its price. You get used to it after some weeks. Like that. How you say? It works a lot better than a nicotine patch, let me tell you. Okay. So then, Purushcharya Vidhi means those are Vedic rites that prepare one for the initiation. So that would mean it's things like chanting, living a regulated lifestyle, serving prasad, taking part in yajna, these kind of activities that are general activities that anybody can take part in, but they're directly connected to basically the activities of serving the Lord, serving the devotees, you know, chanting the name like this. So that's what's Purushcharya Vitti. So because one is liberated on the Bhagavat platform, there's no need for that. So the name doesn't require it. So that's the whole point, is the name can always function at this level. So the point in question really is us. So when it says that in chanting the name, diksha and Purushcharya rites are not necessary, because for the holy name, he doesn't require these things. But it may be that we do. But let's say like the Gayatri mantras, they require it. They don't work. If you haven't received them through the appropriate thing, you don't have the proper character, they don't work. You'll get some benefit because in every Gayatri mantra, there's always names. There's holy names. So for having chanted those three holy names, you will get benefit. But the actual effect of the complete mantra, that you won't get. Like that. So they have rules, but because they're a lower one, they're on a lower platform, they require rules. Right? Just like the Pancharatras working on a lower platform, it has rules. But the Bhagavat, the holy name, is completely independent. Therefore, he doesn't require them. But we require them if we're conditioned. That's the element. Does that make sense? Like that. By avoiding namavas and namaparad, gradually a person will be able to chant the name continuously. So that's a generic thing, avoiding namavas and namaparad. Someone on the platform of bhava can easily do that. So they come to this point of continuously chanting. For us, then, it's a practice. It's still a sadhana. And through the pancharatric rites and that process, we become purified so that we start avoiding the namavas and namaparad. Right? Then we become nicely situated. By continuing to chant in this way, the devotee trying to attain the merciful glance of the deity will continuously realize the Lord's name and form. Gradually, he will be able to realize simultaneously the name, form, qualities of the deity. Finally, he will realize the name, form, qualities while meditating on the factual pastimes of the Lord. By participation in the pastimes, rasa arises. Rasa is the last attainment. The stage of rasa can be quickly attained if the devotee maintains an intense longing for rasa while chanting the name. Right, so here he's given the whole process, basically the whole thing in a nutshell. Then he'll get into details on the chanting, right? Because generally you always open with your main point, your thesis. Then from that, then you give explanation and all that. So here then we see is he takes up the chanting. He will become, then, avoiding namabhasa and namaparad, he will be able to chant continuously. When that continuous chanting is there, then he will start to realize the name and form, right, by worshipping the deity. Then, from that, he'll get the name, form, and qualities. Then, from that, he'll get name, form, qualities while meditating on the pastimes. From the pastimes, then, rasa is arising. And then when rasa arises, that's your ultimate attainment. So that also answers the question, what am I supposed to think about when I'm chanting? Right? Because therefore, the first thing is to avoid is namabhas namaparad, to always be able to chant. And so therefore, we're starting with the name. When that becomes steady, then naturally then the form can come in. But if you're already, if you're trying, means, how will you think of the form if these other distractions are there? Right, of namaparad or other things. So when those are steady and those are in control, then name and form will be very prominent, because the name will be continuous, so that's prominent. And then the form, because we're worshiping the deity. And so then we'll be remembering the Lord. When that goes from that, then the qualities of the deity will start to come into it. From that, then when there's qualities, only with qualities can you have activities. Right, so until the quality, so devotees want to go from name, you know, then form pastimes. You never hear anybody ask about qualities. But if we notice in the Nectar Devotion, the first part is talking about what is devotional service and defining it, right? From the Adhikar, what devotional service is, the nature of it, the qualifications of one to do it, what is Vaidhi Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and up to Prema. Right? Then the next three waves then are defining the actual platform of rasa. Right? And so it opens with Krishna's 64 qualities. Right? It doesn't start with Staibhav. That comes actually in the third part. It opens with Vibhav, which is Krishna's qualities of what attracts you to him. Because you have name, form, qualities. Only if you're attracted, then there are pastimes. Right? So therefore, it starts there. But you generally never hear, that is the point. No one is asking that. It's a matter of, should I meditate on the pastimes or should I only meditate? It's all kinds of, you know, this. It's nice, but the point is the pastimes are based on the qualities. It's a quality that's being appreciated and expressed. That's why there's a pastime. Otherwise, does that make sense? The pastime has no meaning if there is not qualities. Because it's Krishna's attractive. Therefore, then one wants to interact. Because of his qualities, therefore his pastimes unfold in the way they do. Right? You see, in the material world, depending upon a person's qualities, then their activities go in a certain way. Does that make sense? You see the activities of somebody, you read their biography, then you can see their activities are based on their qualities. Therefore, qualities are the important element. Okay? So then, attaining to the point of rasa, that means then your chanting has become perfect. Like that. Not something else. So, because one can chant 16 rounds, it comes very nicely. One is not distracted. One's mind's not going all over the universe. That means then this is good. Now we're solidly situated. Now we can go for then the form, the qualities, and then the pastimes, and that will get us to rasa. Shouldn't think that now this is the end of the line. Like sometimes devotees will think, when they get initiated, now I'm perfect. No, that's where it begins. Right? You've done so much service that when you get initiated, that means now it's serious devotion will begin. Same way as when your chanting is stable. Then you can say, now serious chanting begins. Right? Is that okay? Yes.
Maharaj, about form, it's not clear from the talks that you are chanting an afterlife, you're starting to be in the
days
of form, how
does that mean? Form means is that it's just like if you know somebody. If you've heard about somebody, you know their name. Like we say George Bush, then most people, you know, understand that, okay, there's some guy that's named this, and you hear his name regularly. Right, so you've heard of the name, so you can recognize it. But then if you've seen a picture, then when someone says the name, then that picture of the person comes into mind. Right? So it's natural. It's not a matter of you having to meditate upon it artificially. It's a matter of when the name comes to that stage, the name and that person go together. Right? Krishna means he looks like this. So they just go together. Then, as that matures, then it's the name for that person, that form. That person has qualities. Then the qualities come up because that's what we're attracted to. When we're attracted, then you can get involved in the pastimes. But through that's where the meditation is. Like that. Because the form is, you'll see it. It's not a matter of meditation. It's a matter of, because it just comes automatically. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, it's a natural process. But the thing is what he's saying here. Stage of rasa can quickly be attained if the devotee maintains an intense longing for rasa while chanting the name. Like in the previous point, it says, what the vaidhi process works very nicely, but it's slow. If you want to speed it up, then there has to be desire to actually develop love for Krishna. When that is there, that is a drive, then it moves much quicker. So in the same way, it's when one wants to have that taste for the name, that rasa, to be absorbed in that rasa, you know, the relationship, the loving sentiments towards Krishna. It doesn't mean that you're performing the activities, but that is your mood. Then it makes the process go quicker. Does that make sense? So in other words, a desire for actually being involved with Krishna based on natural loving sentiments, that makes the whole process work very fast. But if it's just, you know, this is a spiritual process, I'm freeing myself from material contamination, I'm purifying myself, I'm elevating myself to the spiritual platform, it will work, but it'll be slower. You know, so Prabhupada's recommended one lifetime, so the process can be done in that way. Other sampradayas, they do not profess one lifetime. I think the Madhvas, it takes like 14 lifetimes or something. You have to, all those stages that what's his name goes through? Gopakumar. Basically, the Madhvas, they go through all those stages. You have to get up to Brahma's planet and this and that. Only from there, when Brahma goes, at the end of Brahma's lifetime, you go with him. Because you're a devotee, so then you go back to Godhead. But otherwise, you have to get through all these different things and get up there, and you know, all it's very serious. So none of the other sampradayas say one lifetime you go back to Godhead. We're the only ones that say that, because our process, being based on this process of that greed and desire, right? Our main it means the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then the Kama Gayatri. Therefore, then it can move at that speed. The others don't have that speed. You know, and you see as they're starting off with nice people, right? Born in nice, you know, traditional families, following the tradition, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, you know, they can tell you seven generations and their names of their family, you know. I mean, who would know who is, you know? It means there was Bill, there was George, and then who was before that, who knows, you know? It's like, George you only heard about, right? Like that, you know. But they can tell you, seven generations. So they're starting out nice, pious families that follow Varnashram, follow the standards, have always been following the standards, sometimes worshiping the deities, this, that. They start from there. And then they're saying it's going to take you so long. You know, and our process is starting out, you know, from the gutter at best. You know, like that. And then from there, going back to Godhead in one lifetime. So it's much more dynamic. Yes?
When we're chanting and we're trying to become, this is the question that you say everyone has answered it, but I was just wondering particularly, and we're trying to control our mind, so we should concentrate on just hearing the name?
That's the main thing, hearing the name. But it means if it works, you think about, you know, the deity or whatever works. You know, better to be hearing the name. But if it's a matter of thinking of nonsense or absorbed in your service, better be absorbed in your service. Because at least that's favorable to the process of chanting the name rather than nonsense. Does that make sense? So in other words, whatever's going to be closer to pure chanting, that's what you're going to try to situate yourself. Is that okay? It's very individual, because the point is everybody's going to have, you know, one is what state they're at when they chant, the other is, you know, what day it is, you know, what phase of the moon it's in, you know, whether it's a good hair day, a bad hair day, you know, all those kind of things. Yes? You want to know if you get it at Tesco's or at what's his name?
If it's possible.
Huh? I'm not sure. Even though they have a gourmet section, I haven't seen it as of yet. Though I've heard in Hungary they got the biggest Tesco's in Europe. You could try there, maybe. But
I went there once and they have live lobsters swimming around their delicatessen. Hungry Tesco. It's like really gross, and people are just.
That's okay. They have lobsters. They could have, you know, crocodiles, anything, whatever. But we're asking, did you see a section on,
no,
you know, prema, you know, pure chanting the holy name or something like that? I'm wondering how the packaging would be. Would they use some slick modern thing to make it more attractive, or they would use something traditional, or would they use an organic, you know, biodegradable packaging? Because, you know, chanting is very natural and, you know, just coming from the heart and all that. Maybe they would package it in a little heart-shaped thing or something like that. So, might be over in the Valentine section or something. like that. But then the other one only happened in February. Maybe that's it. It's only available in February. Right? Okay, maybe. So I've never checked in February. So. It's just you have to want it. It's that simple. We laugh, but it's that simple. You want it, that's the only qualification.
But what makes me want?
Association. Now here, we're associating Bhaktivinoda Thakura, and he's telling us about that. So therefore we think, oh, that's there, that's nice, I want that. So just that wanting that, that will give that seed for that. But then you have to cultivate it by wanting it more. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of wanting it. Does that make sense? Yes or no? You use it every day in your life. It's a matter of using it now for Krishna. You're sitting here, and then you went into the shop, and you were just walked by. You had a little time. You're just poking around and looking at clothes, right? So then you see some things that are nice and that, but, you know, that wasn't what you were there for. So then you walk off, right? So nothing was purchased. Now, when you get back to your house, you think about it. You think, that one thing was nice. I would actually like that. Right? Now, if you think you like that, but then you might be busy distracted by this or that. But the more you think, no, I really want that, then you'll walk back down to the place and get it. Right? So what got you the shop? Because you were in the shop, you were holding it in your hand, but you didn't buy it. So it's simply your desire for it, that increased desire that actually made it happen. So it's the same with the name. Because you're dealing here with people, right? We take it into this, it's a mechanical process of spiritual upliftment. We can start from there, that's not a problem. But eventually you find out, is actually God's a person, I'm a person, we have a relationship. And that's just a matter of, do you want to act in that relationship or not? That's the bottom line. Does that make sense? So that's what's so unique about this process. The only qualification for it really is wanting it. So that's why we keep ourselves in an environment where we have the best chance for wanting it. That's why we're always going to the temple, associating with the devotees, you know, reading, doing so many things, because all those things will put us in contact with the desirable object. And so in that, especially if we associate with those who have more of an interest, that will develop it in us. Right? Does that make sense? You got a fire over here. Is that okay? It's not discussed so much because then you think, oh, I just have to want it. I don't have to follow the rules. But the point is, for the neophyte, basically, it's only because they follow the rules. They're in environments that awaken the desire to want it. Because you're in the temple, and the kirtan's going on, and you get absorbed in it. Therefore, then you think, yes, this is what I want to do. But if you're sitting in your house, and that might not arise. It might, but it might not. So that's why these things are there, and your life is regulated so that you're put in contact with Krishna from all different angles. Right, with the deity, with the spiritual master, with the holy name, with the Vaishnavas, with the Bhagavatam, with Prasad, right, with service to the Lord. All these different aspects, when it's done, is there. Tulsi. All these things, so that opportunity that it could awaken is there. You know what I'm saying? The point is the alarm clock goes off, but you have to decide you want to get up. Otherwise, there's this thing button called snooze. This seems to be the more popular option. You know. Does that make sense? So it's a balance. That's why it's been founded on. We find before we discuss that, we've discussed already that the bhakti, the process of devotional service, is based on Upanishads and Vedanta. And if it's not, it's bogus. Right? So that's it was established there. So on that, then our whole philosophy and culture are based. Then within that, then the activities we perform are supposed to be done not for ourselves, but for the pleasure of the Lord. So we follow the appropriate activities for the Lord's satisfaction, right? Without wanting anything for ourselves, right? Then that establishes us properly in that. Then from there, then it's a matter of distinguishing that the devotion is actually separate from this, from the mechanics of the process. The mechanics are there to express the devotion through. Like you give a gift to somebody, it's your affection that you're showing. The gift is the medium. But if you think the gift is actually the affection, then there'll be a problem. But it's a medium for that. Right? Because if you think, oh, well, if I get a great gift, then they'll be happy with me. That's not enough. It has to be you want to make them happy. Then they'll be happy with your gift. You know what I'm saying? There's something more. The emotional content has to be there. Right? Then you understand, but the emotion is still expressed through a form. So it's not that we give up form. That the impersonalists do. No, we keep form and emotion. But we use form in connection with pleasing Krishna, transcendental emotion. Therefore, whether we're using superior form or inferior form, meaning from the spiritual world or from the material world, it doesn't matter. It still carries the same point, right? Does that make sense? Whether it's a dozen long stem roses or it's something he picked up from the field, if the emotional content is there, it carries the same. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the point. So whether it's superior or inferior, it doesn't matter, as long as the mood is there. Then, in dealing with that, then we're making the establishes that desiring that mood, that's what actually makes the whole thing work. But that's been said after having established everything else, having established the philosophy on Vedanta, having established the devotional process on Vaidhi, right? And that this process is based on is Naishkarmya. So even that emotion is there, it's still to please Krishna, not for yourself. Oh, I like this because it makes me feel good. No, it's because I like this because I can express my affection for Krishna through this. Does that make sense? So it's very important to note that Bhaktivinoda course discusses Raganuga Bhakti, and he takes it right up to Ragatmika and discusses the various forms in there. But he's already in the same degree of explanation, he's already discussed Vedanta and Upanishads. Right? If we notice, we went through, we went through eight points, technical, philosophical points, before we got to even discussing the devotional process and bhava. Right? So only on all that, then we have basically one page that deals with the Raganuga Bhakti. You know, that's after another basically 65 pages. So that's the proper balance. Because otherwise the tendency, if I just feel like it, I don't have to follow these rules. So when I say that, I feel like it, but then the next moment I don't. And there's no form to ensure that I'm doing an activity that actually could be favorable for devotional service. And therefore, that's why it's called sahaja, easy. Sahaj means easy. It's just they take this process cheaply. Oh, I just have to have the mood. And then where's the form? Is there a form? There's no form. And then in that, you lose everything. So just as if it means if you have philosophy, if you have the philosophy without the proper culture, you lose everything. Same way if you have the culture without the philosophy, you lose it. If it's all bhav, what's the form? Because then it's just whatever you feel like. So what's the form? What should it look like? You don't follow rules, so there is no form. Right? Does that make sense? You know? I mean, so you have that even in reflected even in your contemporary religions. Right? if it's based on you know, tradition and rules, you go into the church and there's a lot there. The art there, the architecture, the music, you know, everything about it. They have saints, they have all these kind of things. There's a whole rich environment in which it could invoke that religious sentiment, right? But if you walk into a church that's based on the principle of bhav, there's nothing there. They're stark. You could probably even say zen. There's no art, there's no music, there's no saints, there's nothing. It's just you and your little bhav and God. And that's it. And then if it's bhav, it's just you, what you feel like, then what's the next step? If you feel like thinking about God, then that's great. But if you don't, if you feel like being involved in material activities, then that's what comes. And if you feel like making money, then that's what comes. You understand? So modern culture is based on simply working on bhav. Because that's the highest on the spiritual platform. If it's not used properly, it's the lowest on the material platform. Because now the more and more you go, it's just on what you feel like. Right? That makes sense? Someone asks, oh, how come you don't eat this? Then you say, well, you know, the doctor said this, that, and all. Oh, don't be fanatic. You say, how come you don't eat this? Oh, I don't like it. Oh, okay. You understand? So bhav is much more of a thing these days. You just feel like it. That's good enough. Does that make sense? So that's why then Bhaktivinoda Thakura and the Acharyas are very careful that when they discuss these topics, which they all do, they first put it on a very strong foundation of the philosophy and the sadhana. Then only in light of that, then you're talking about bringing out the mood. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that? Yeah? No? Yeah, okay. The offenses against the name are 10, as mentioned in the Padma Purana. So then it goes through it. To show envy or criticize the pure devotee. To think that the devatas are equal to Krishna. To disrespect or disobey the guru. To disrespect the scriptures. To think that the glorification of the name is empty praise. To imagine meanings of the name. To commit sin on the strength of the name. To consider the name on the same level as pious actions. To give the name to unqualified people. Not to have faith in the name or taste for the name after hearing its glories. And to accept the name without giving up a material attachment. So then this is coming from the Padma Puran, right? What we are always chanting, yes.
A couple of points there. One is sometimes the offense is given is not to accept demigods like Shiva and being on the same level. Isn't that an Abhinav Bhagavatam?
That means here is, let's see, just... Yeah, well, because here he's just, because this is Bhaktivinoda Thakura's translation, but here we see, Shivasya Shri Vishnur Ya Iha. Right, so it means, in other words, he's saying, the devatas here he's just given in general, but he's saying to consider demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to.
But doesn't the
Bhagavad Gita
say that you should accept Shiva on the same level? Not to accept him on the same
level? No, it's not the same level, it's a matter of... He's a transformation, so he's non-different, but he's not on the same level. Because transformation has happened, so there's a difference. You know, that's because that's our philosophy. Is what is it? What could I was it? Parinamavad. Parinamavad means that it's transformed. It means you have Brahman, but it has become transformed by being covered by illusion. Like this. And so it's a matter of then dealing and bringing it back. Like that. Mayavad, then their point is just, you've created the illusion. You know. So then there's a difference here. And so they say the illusion actually isn't there. We say the illusion exists, but we don't need to actually be under the control of that illusion that exists. Material energy does exist. The illusion is there, but we can give up that illusion and then functioning within the material energy come to the transcendental platform. Well, they say the material energy and the illusion about is all doesn't exist. Like that. So this whole point is that there's a non-difference. There's no difference between Shiva and Vishnu, but that we're talking Sadashiva, because he's Krishna who's transformed, like that. But at the same time, is there's a difference, like that. Because then we say is that then we look at the finer differences. So it's like Advaitacharya is Vishnu Tattva, but at the same time is He's the is the Purusha avatar, in the mood of the Purusha, while Nityananda, then that's the mood of, you know, Vaikunthapant, of God, while Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, he's the mood of the that means the original, like that. So he is the complete Godhead, and so he is only the Vishai. He is not the Ashray. Well, Nityananda and Dvaita are Ashrays. They're devotees. Right? Nityananda is a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Advaitacharya is a devotee of Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Like, so Lord Chaitanya is in a unique position, as Krishna is. That's why Krishna has come as Lord Chaitanya. Because only then he can then taste what it means to be Ashray. Servant. So then there is a distinction made there in the flavor and rasa. But means your Shambhu in the material world, that's a position of a demigod, that then he's in a lower position. He only has, 55 of the qualities. Right? And even those 50, yeah, the 50 qualities are in great amount, but those last five, they're in some amount, but he has them. While in Vishnu, those are full. Plus then there's five more. Right, that are very great, you know. And then Krishna has those, and he has four more than that. So it's a matter of understanding what is the context in which they're saying it, because Shiva is the great devotee of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna considers. We have to understand here is that we see difference, but at the same time as Krishna doesn't. Right. So when we have the Dvait Advait. The Dvait is our perspective. Advait is Krishna's perspective. Because of Krishna, it's all his, him. It's all his expansion, it's all his. You know. But we, we consider that there's us and there's Krishna. Like that. So it's a very fine point. Like that. So in this way, you have to understand what is being discussed. When we're taking the platform of tattva, of the position between Vishnu tattva and Shiva tattva and that, there's a distinction. But when we're working on the devotional platform in rasa, we don't make that distinction. Like in tattva we'll say, you know, there's Krishna and there's Radharani, and there's Krishna and there's Radharani is subordinate. But when it comes to rasa, if you look at it, generally Krishna is subordinate to Radharani. You know, so that's the point, is to be able to distinguish, and is the topic about tattva or is the topic about rasa? Because if it's about the pastimes and the relationships, then it takes on different forms. That's the point of a chintabheda-bheda tattva. You can take two contradictory things and they can function at the same time with no contradiction. Right? Bhaktivinoda Kultur was discussing that point, is that there's a potency that does that. There's a reconciling potency that brings all these different contradictory points of Krishna all together, and they can all function at once. It's one of Krishna's potencies. So that potency then does that. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of understanding which angle we are looking at. So be it Bhagavatam Rita, you have to see the context that's there. So Krishna is saying is that in rasa and that, there's no difference. And technically speaking, when you're talking Sadashiva, Sadashiva is Mahavishnu in the mood of destruction. That's all. Because the Purusha avatar, he's distinguished in Chaitanya Charitamrita from from the Vaikuntha, you know, from the Sankarshan, I mean, from the mood in Vaikuntha. By in Vaikuntha, then Krishna thinks I am God, while in the Purusha avatars think I'm the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, right? Because in Vaikuntha there's no creation or destruction, so he's simply God. But Purusha avatar means all three. So in the mood of I'm the creator, that's Hiranyagarbha. Then that comes as Brahma, expands as Brahma. And as I am the destroyer, that's Sadashiva, because of the ignorance, the false ego. That expands then as Shambhu in the material world. Like that. So there actually is no difference. It's a matter of there's Vishnu, and his right arm is Sadashiva, his left arm is Hiranyagarbha, as mentioned in the Brahma Samhita. So it's just his moods. All these three are there combined. So in that way you say he's non-different. So therefore, Advaitacharya can be referred to as Mahavishnu or as Sadashiva. Because on that level, there is no difference. Does that make sense? Because in that mood, then he glances. And what enters, then that becomes Shambhu. What doesn't enter, that's still him who glanced. That's Sadashiv. So it's Mahavishnu's in that mood. Therefore, that's what's going on. When he comes into the material world, then he's also known as Tamasi. Because you're dealing with a false ego. Through false ego, everything in the material world is created. So because Krishna enters everything and makes it all happen, he's doing that with the mode of ignorance. Therefore, he's known as Tamasi. He's not tamasic, but he's entering with that flavor because of the glance, which was Sadashiva. So that's why you can say actually everything is Shiva. But it's Vishnu, but in that mood. You know. So only if you're worshiping him as Vishnu, then that aspect comes out. Then you're dealing with him in that mood. But if not, if you're not making that distinction, then you're actually dealing with everything here, you're dealing with Lord Shiva. So that's why I like the Hiranyagarbha Shukta. So Hiranyagarbha means, you know, the creation of the material universe. And it specifically means Garbhodakshay Vishnu, because he's the one that manages the, you know, has entered the Hiranyagarbha. Like that. That when the verses there, if you read them, they're talking, you would think they're talking about Lord Shiva. But they're not. They're talking about Vishnu as Hiranyagarbha, and who has created everything and about the as the universal form. That universal form, its entrance into everything is due to false ego. So it carries that element of ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah? So it's fine, so you have to see the connection, what it means there. That's why we can deal with these contradictions. Others can't. Shris, they won't go near a demigod temple, let alone offer obeisances. They would never, never, never offer obeisances to any demigod. They couldn't care less who it is. Madhvas will worship them.
So it says if a smart Brahmana worshipping some demigod walks by their house, they will wash everything with cow dung.
Yeah. Right. If they just see him, they'll take a bath with their clothes on, right? You know, so they don't have nothing to do with demigods. So they're taking that they're, you know, this point very strictly. Like this. Well, the Madhvas, then they'll worship them because they understand all they are is office holders for. So the potency, Indra, simply means it's the potency of Krishna to rule, you know, as the king. So actually, what we're offering obeisances to is Krishna's potency. The demigod was not really, you know, that's secondary. You know. But still, in both of them, they're dealing with the element of, you know, one is the tattvas, one is they're not absorbed in Krishna, the other is that it's Krishna's potency. But we can deal with both of those and take it further. You know, and see the devotional side of them, see their origin, take them back to their origin. You know, take the demigods back to, you know, Hanuman Garuda, and then from there take it all the way back to Vrindavan. You got Subal and Sridham. You know, so we can deal with all this. Because when you're dealing with Braj, you can deal with anything. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema Nandini.